Okay, we are on page 287, 288. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of the first chapter of Shar Yichud Vemuna. The first word of the line is Yimei Breishith. We're starting with the word Zesh Amar HaRizal. And in the English, it's the last paragraph on the page. The same thought was expressed by the Ari, a blessed memory. We are talking about creation theory. And we said that the words of the ten utterances are enlivening and involved with the creation constantly, keeping it going. And were it to be that Hashem were to stop his involvement in the creation would cease to exist. We gave the example of a rock flying through the air, that when the energy, which is, changing its normal nature of just sitting on the ground, is dissipated, it goes back to sitting on the ground, if you recall. Mm-hmm. So now, Did we discuss the extrapolation of the word rock from the word dry land? Do you remember doing that?
I don't remember.
Okay, so that's what we have to do that now. So this is what the Arizal says: Shigam b'demi mamish k'may avanim ba'afar omayim yesh behem nefesh v'chayis ruchnius. This is what the Arizal says: that inanimate objects, and he leaves a whole list of inanimate objects, have a spiritual vitality to them. We know this because in the times of the Alter Rebbe, he couldn't talk about it because they didn't have the physical example for it. But we now have the ability that if it were to be that you were to take an inanimate object and stick it under an electron microscope, what would you see? You would see movement. Mm-hmm. Movement determines there to be life. And that be the case then, so an inanimate object is not, if you can't call it now then, the word inanimate, meaning having no life, is no longer applicable. It's no longer true. We have to come up with
appearance.
In English, we have to come up with
it's a
different
zimen.
Yeah, in English, we have to come up with a different word. Okay, in Hebrew, the word is domem, which means quiet, silent. It doesn't talk. Okay? So instead of calling it maybe inanimate, we would have to maybe call it immobile or something like that. The human, animal, plant, and immobile species. But I haven't seen it talked about yet that anybody was changing the word inanimate. So, but it has a life force to it. And that life force, you could even go so far as to say it's a soul.
Well, plants
grow. You can see them moving.
They know they're moving.
Yeah. You can see that. So the there are various and sundry medrashim and commentaries that have what the rocks are thinking about. There's a famous one in comes in the Hayom Yom that if a person is walking in the street and they're not talking Torah, so the rocks say, "Bullock, what makes you different than me that you get to step on me?" Okay, you're not talking Torah, I'm not talking Torah. So what are you stepping on me for? Now, is the rock thinking that? I don't think so. Okay, the idea being is it's a parable or an allegory, whatever you'd like to say about it. But do rocks have feelings, I guess, if they have a soul? Who knows? I mean, you know, just be nice to those rocks. You never know when they might need you. You might need them. Yeah. Anyway, I'm being glued.
They have a purpose. They have a soul.
They definitely. That means to say that you have these letters, which are the utterances that make up the name of this creation, providing the channels for the godliness to flow into it. And that brings it into existence. Now here's where it comes to this thing that I mentioned before. Even though it doesn't say any place. And God said, let there be rocks. And there were rocks. But are there rocks in the world? Yes. So where is it that rocks come from?
Derived from the earth.
They are. So you have a word. God said that there should be something called the Yabasha.
land.
Dry land.
Yeah.
Okay? So dry land, one of the things that you're going to find on dry land is rocks. Contained in the word dry land is the word rock. Okay, there's a piece of scrap paper over on the end of the table, I think. Is that scrap paper, I hope? Let's see.
Yeah. So is it down?
It is not.
Well,
yeah,
okay. Dirt is just...
Okay, you have, for those people listening at home, you guys are going to have to imagine this. So, we have Yabasha is a yud, a base, a shin, and a hay. And I will show you folks, when no time will my hand ever leave my arm, that contained in the word Yabasha are the letters Aleph, Beis, and Nun, which is final Nun, which is the Hebrew word for stone or rock. Okay, now it's easy to find the base because in the second letter of the word of Yabasha and the second letter of the word Evan, both of those are bases, so that's fine. Now, if you you play Scrabble?
A little,
okay. One of the things that you can do when you're like really stuck is you put down things like Z-E-E. What's Z-E-E?
The letter Z.
That's how you spell the letter Z, exactly. So if you take the third letter, shin, when you say shin, okay, what you have there is a shin, a yud, and a final nun. So there, in the final nun from the letter shin, we have the final nun of the word Evan. Then, if you do the same thing with the last letter in the word Yabasha, which is a hey, and you spell that out, hey, and aleph, so then you have the aleph that is contained within the last hey of the letter of the word Yabasha. You have the aleph, which is the first letter of the word Evan. So contained within, hidden within the word dry land, is the word rock. Very interesting thing. I don't know if you could do this in Greek, but I know you can't do it in any other language.
Can't do
it in English. In English, for example, what happens if you do the word dry land? So from D you get a D-E-E. So the only thing you get is a D and E. From R you get an A and an R. From A you get an A, and from R you get an R. From a Y, okay, so you get a W and an H. That kind of spells out a little bit more, but... From an L, from land, you get an E and an L, an A, you get an A, an N, you get an E and an N, and D, you get a D and an E. And that's it. Yeah. You can't go more than one letter down, one generation down in English. And it's the same thing. I asked somebody about this in Russian. In Russian, you can't do it either.
Cyrillic, no.
I don't know Greek, because Greek is very much patterned after Hebrew, if you could possibly do it, because The letters are very long because it's alpha, beta, gamma, delta. So you can spell those out for like, you get a lot of letters with each one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it might work in Greek, but only because of its patterning after the Hebrew alphabet. The Hebrew alphabet is the formation of Lashon HaKodesh. It's called Lashon HaKodesh because Hashem used that as the vehicle for bringing the world into existence. Now, what has to happen in order for rocks to appear? Because we said that when God said, let there be dry land on the third day of creation, what happened? Nothing.
Potential.
It was all there. The energy was there, set up. But it didn't actually come into existence until Adam opened his eyes. Because there was no need for a creation until Adam. You look perplexed.
Think about the animals and the...
Everything's all in potential. What do you need animals for? The whole purpose of the creation is for people. What do you need an animal for? What do you need people for? What do you need dry land for? What do you need stars? What do you need light? You don't need any of that.
Okay.
If you don't have any people.
It was all for the benefit of man.
It's all for the benefit of man. So... You might say it was put into, placed into, to come into actuality, but never came into actuality until Adam was alive. So the result says that this godliness is what's keeping it in existence, this rock, from preventing it from becoming absolute nothing. You would now know the question of the answer. If God wanted to destroy the world, we know that Noach, in the portion of Noach, God promised, I'm never going to bring another flood. And so then the question comes up, so if God did want to destroy the entire world, how would God destroy it?
Just, you could destroy the whole universe just by
how?
Stopping.
By stopping to create it, that's correct.
But the earth itself,
he doesn't have to go through fire and brimstone.
No.
And he doesn't have to do anything in natural disaster, whatever he doesn't. If the Hashem does not want the universe to exist anymore, all he has to do is stop creating it.
Same, and the spiritual world too.
Exactly. If Hashem wants a creation to cease to exist, all he has to do is stop making it, and it ceases to exist.
The whole shebang.
And it goes back to absolute nothing like the 6 days, before the 6 days of creation. Just like that rock that gets thrown in the air and lands on the ground, looks like it did before it got picked up and thrown. So that's what he says. Even though the word rock does not appear in the 10 utterances, it comes through different permutations and combinations. Because what happens is, when you have to extrapolate, when you have to find your final nun at the tail end of the inside of the shin, what you're doing, what's happening spiritually, is there is a containment of the godliness. That's the Tzimtzum process. That's what's referred to as the Seder Histalshulus, the chain reaction of cause and effect. Through this is Hamizgal Galeis Biralah Sharim, which flow through the 231 gates of Panim V'Ichor, K'moshekosav B'Sefer Yitzira. What are the 231 gates of front and back, I hear you ask? So if you had the number of two-letter words, the smallest word in Hebrew that you can make is a two-letter word, the number of two-letter words that you can make out of 22 letters is 231. It's 22 times 20 factor is the factorial of it. 22 factorial times 20 divided by, it's 22 divided by 22 factorial, which is 22 times 21, divided by, or minus rather, 20 factorial, which is 20 times 19, comes out to, you check the math at home, 231. Okay, and in Sefer Yetzirah, and copied from Sefer Yetzirah, appears in various Kabbalah books, it's laid out like a triangle. It has starts out with Aleph, and then Aleph Beis, and Aleph Gimel, and Aleph, all the way to Aleph Tav. So the next row starts with Beis Aleph. Okay, and then goes through Beis Aleph, Beis Gimel, Beis Aleph, so the next one is Gimel Aleph. Mm-hmm. So it's getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. So then finally the last one is Tav Aleph. Okay, so that's the way that it shows up, and it is said the morale of Prague never admitted to having made a golem. He denied it categorically. Wow. Because in doing so, he's saying, "Yeah, I made a golem. What would that mean? Yes, I'm a tzaddik, and I have control over powers of the creative forces of nature. That's what saying yes, I made a golem would be." So he always denied having made a golem. We know of the golem of Prague's existence as a golem from the writings of his son after the morale passed away. And it's written there that he used the Sefer Yetzirah and meditating on these and able to channel, you might say, the godly forces through the 231 gates, that the morale was able to make a golem. Okay, does that help you? No, that doesn't help me either. I'm not making...
Make a golem, but he...
Who?
The Ron Bond would use it to, like, he made a boat that traveled on its own across land.
I've heard about such things. You have a story with...
He was forced to learn. He was... His arm twisted so he would learn the secrets he didn't want to learn, but then he used it to help save.
Yeah, you have the Rabba made a golem, and he sent it off to somebody like Timisekhta Megillah, and he asked this other rabbi, asked a question, he didn't talk, he didn't answer him. He said, oh, I'm not going to deal with you, exactly. You're not a human being, and he disintegrated the guy. So you gotta, can't, those guys in the Gemara, you can't mess with them, they don't fool around. Until there's finally this cause reaction from the 10 utterances, the nimshach mehem tziruf v'shem evan, until you finally get rock. Now I chose Yabasha and Evan because that's an easy one. But in actuality, to get from the statement, and God said, "Let there be dry land," to a rock that you can pick up, which has three dimensions, took an infinite number of steps, like the way that I did. Those little dot, dot, dots between the final nuns, for example. It's an infinite number of steps. And this godliness, which has now gone through these steps and permutations, is the vitality enlivening the rock, keeping it in existence as a rock. The Kehal Kolob Nevraim, and so too is with every creature, Sheba Olam, that's in the world. Hashem Shenikraim Baham Velashon HaKedesh, the names which are called to it in Hebrew, and he calls it the Holy Tongue, Hein Hein Oisius Hadibar HaMistalshus Memadrega LaMadrega Masar Maimar Shebetera. These are the letters of the speech which go through this creation process from one lower level down to the next lower level, starting from the 10 utterances from which the world was said, and which is mentioned in the Torah. Al yedei chalufim v'tamori oisus v'rash shesharim, sharim, and through the different switches and permutations and combinations of the letters as they pass through these 231 gates. Ashimegas mislabeshes ba'oisay nivrelahachiyosay, until there reaches and it encloses itself into that creature in order to enliven it. This is why, I don't know if we remember, if we talked about it last time, the idea of naming your child. Can we talk about that?
I don't remember.
How many kids do you have? Four?
Three.
Three.
Brothers and.
Okay. So far. So, the oldest one.
Penina.
Okay. Why was she named Penina?
Great, her grandmother.
She's named after her grandmother, Penina.
Pearl.
Here's the deal. It's perfect. It's exactly perfect. You had in mind that you're going to name her after your bubby, who you loved so much. Mm-hmm. And so you're thinking that this is the 21st century, and it's better to give her a Hebrew name. Who knows, maybe she'll make Aliyah someplace. And so you're going to give her a name instead of Pearl, which is a Yiddish name, which means a pearl.
You went with Jules.
You're going to give her a name, Penina, which I think, I'm not sure, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Precious jewel, something.
Penina means precious jewel also?
It means.
I think Penina came from the idea of like having something to do with time. But that's, you know, depends how you want to look at it.
Peninium is jewels.
Oh, that's right. Peninium is jewels. Okay. So there's a correlation to it. But you didn't name her Peril.
No. I didn't.
Okay.
Like, and Moshe and Yoni.
Okay,
Yoni
so time, now. So, I want to say there's other names that start with a pay that you could have. I can't think of any right now, but.
We were thinking, like, we like jewels. And
okay, so.
It was an easy.
It was something that sort of like, it hit you, it tickled you.
Yeah.
You just kind of like, you like the way, you like the mouth feel of it.
Sure.
Okay, I got news for you. It had nothing to do with your grandmother. It has to do with the name of the neshama of your daughter.
That one.
Your daughter's neshama is named Penina. you as the parents picked up on that godliness.
It's like Adam when he named the animals.
Like, exactly like Adam naming the animals. No, I wasn't going to say that. Because Adam saw the godliness coming into it. Okay. You feel it. It's more like prophecy. Okay. Where you got something. You're not exactly sure what it is. You got something. But you don't know exactly what it is. So out comes, from peril comes Peninnah. There's a joke that I heard back in the 1990s that two people meet in the year 2050. And one introduces himself and the other says, "Hi, my name is Shlomo." He says, "Shlomo, where'd you get the name Shlomo from?" He says, "I was named after my grandfather Scott." So, anyway, the...
God willing.
So it really isn't. People would write to the Rebbe and say, "Well, I could name it this name, I could name it that name. What should I name the name?" The Rebbe would refuse and say, the one time that a person has a chance to experience prophecy, I'm not mixing in. I'm not going to give my opinion. I do know, however, several girls that were adults already that wrote in and said, they were girls, students at Machon Chana, and they wrote into the Rebbe and said, "We were never given Hebrew names. What should we do?" And the Rebbe gave them Hebrew names. Well, a bunch of girls, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 girls. Okay, I know a couple of them. I don't know who they all are. My wife knows them all. They're all her friends. So, and I don't. My wife wasn't one of them, but my wife never had a Hebrew name, and she just took the name Chana because Anne is her English name. Anna is Chana. It's the same thing. Anne is Grace. Chana is Grace. You know. So, but she didn't really occur to her that she really didn't have an official name until she was about 26, and someone said to her that she should really have a proper naming at the Torah. So one Shabbos I was in Kerlul. And I went up to a person. He happened to give me a lead. I said, "I have to name somebody. I have to name a girl for somebody." So he said, "You know, Bekar Shema B'Yisrael, Chana Bas Bela." Okay? My mother-in-law had a Hebrew name, Bela. Mm-hmm. And so everybody wished him, "Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Who had a baby?" My mother-in-law, 26 years ago. You know, so... So, did she not have a name until then? Yeah, she had a name and she was called by it even, but someone just said, "Yeah, she'd better if it be official." So it was official. No. But that's meaning, point being, is that's her name.
When you call it to her, you say the Torah.
That officiates it, but that makes it official.
The public.
Yeah. That makes it official. My daughter, we had in August, my daughter gave birth.
Okay.
First granddaughter. And they gave the daughter, and my granddaughter, an unusual name. So much so that when I heard the name, I told my daughter, without even blinking, "You have been in California too long," giving her such a name. Okay, my granddaughter's name is Pyka, P-Y-K-A. She is the only person in the state of California with the name Pyka. Okay, so I told her, what? Pika in Yiddish means a drum.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a Hebrew word.
It's not. Pika in Yiddish means a drum. I said, "Where did it come from?" It came from the sky. They like the... It's a mouthfeel thing. Oh. So I told my daughter, "What would you like me to call your daughter?" And she said, "I would like it if you were to call her Pika." So I said, "That's fine. I'm willing to do that on condition that that's her Hebrew name. So that when your husband gets called up to the Torah... And they say, Vikara Shema B'Yisrael, don't tell me from Miriam, Mashalamas, this, or someone named after that person. If you want me to call her Pika, she's got to be called Pika at the Torah." So he calls her up. What's her name? Pika. Ta-da! So her Hebrew name is Pika, Pei Yud Yud Kuf Aleph. Like I say, my daughter, who's more knows Yiddish vocabulary better than I do, said a Pika is a small drum. So they named the kid Little Drum. We'll see what this kid does, if she kind of knocks around over there. So the that's the name of the thing. This is what it is. It's the godliness coming into it, and that's why it's named what it's named. And for sure with the name of a human being, because it's the name of the neshama.
Infinitely soul.
Yes.
There's so many kids, I wanted the name since I was little. I'm going to have a son named Yonatan.
Okay.
And a son named, I had these names in my head. I've been feeling them.
I didn't know which one would be first.
I didn't know until I saw him.
Had my father not passed away, I was going to be named after my grandfather, Alexander. So I knew that I was going to have a son, Alexander. So it just took six daughters first to get the son,
wow,
Alexander. So, I should make out some assumptions about his name. Lefi, the last word in line is prati. Lefi she'ein prati nevroim yecholim lekabel chayosim ma'asar ma'imaris atzmin shebetera. Because the individual creatures cannot receive their nurture directly from the ten utterances. Because the godliness is too great. We've given the example before, like with
Simpson. That's a good example.
Yes. The point that we've been mentioning, we've been saying all along, from going back into like the end of the 40s and the previous and Sefer Shalbeni through the end, that even though you have this Tzimtzum process, the godliness maintains its integrity. An example would be in electricity. You have down in Monroe, Michigan, you have this huge thing over there, a nuclear power plant, Fermi 2. Mm-hmm. And it's spinning around those electromagnetic things over there, and spinning off of those turbines is 50,000 volts. Mm-hmm. What happens then is it gets shot out from the 50,000 volts, and it gets sent to a power station. And there, the power station is transformed to 10,000 volts. What happens now with the 10,000 volts? That gets sent to substations, where it's stepped down to 440 volts. What happens at that point? I'm probably missing something in between.
There's a couple transformers. Gets to our transformer and goes down to.
Right. So then you have something on the pole. The pole. The thing on the pole is four. It's coming in into the pole at 440. It
goes down.
It comes out of the pole. You can either get it into your house at 220 or 110.
It comes in at 220. You get two separate lines.
Correct. Okay, so you got 10, 10. So now you have a plug over here that's 110, and you have this little box thing in the end of your cell phone, so that what goes into the cell phone is 6. If we had the ability to put a marker on an electron, we could trace that electron as it's being generated out of Fermi 2 all the way through till it's going into your phone. It would be that electron. Yeah. Because the integrity of the electricity stays the same. What happens is it's contained.
It exchanges when you hit electrons hitting.
One hits another, it's a transfer.
It's always exchanging.
Correct.
So this is transfer. Exchange.
Correct.
All the way along.
You couldn't mark it. Anyway, so, but it's still electricity.
Oh, yeah. It's an equal.
If you put your tongue on the end of the little cord on that little six volt transformer, you're going to get a zip. I don't recommend you do it. Not unless you're depressed. But, you know, so. What would it be if you were to take your phone and plug it into Fermi 2? You'd have ice phone.
You'd have the little bang.
You'd have phone meltdown.
It'd explode.
You can't use it. You would have nothing there. There would be no phone. It's the same thing. It's the Asera Maimaris. It has all this godliness. And if you tried to stuff the Asera Maimaris into a three-dimensional object, it would just boom. It would cease to exist. It would be too much. It would just melt right out of existence. So it has to be this number of contractions. How many contractions are there between 50,000 and 6 is a whole lot less than from infinity to three dimensions. So it takes an infinite number of transformations down, using these step-down transformers, which we call contractions, which is what's happening on the electric line, is the electricity is being contracted from 50,000 to 10,000 to 440 to 220 to 110 to 6. Okay? Yeah. It's the closest example we have to the Seder Istalshelus. Okay, if you knew a little bit more about how they get the original things going with the spinning of the magnets to generate the initial electricity, so you could say that before that there's an, you know, before they started the thing up, you had nothing. So it's, but it's not a true something from nothing, but it's very close.
It generates steam. Steam turns the
magnets. Yep. Asma shibatir shachayas nimshach mehen asman gvigadol me'ed mechinas nevrayim pratim ve'ein kayach behem lekavol lechayas. The individual creature does not have the ability to use the chayas which is enclosed, which is coming out of the ten utterances. El ayedei sheyared achayas mistalshel umadrega lumadrega pachusa memena. The only way that the godliness now becomes user friendly is that that the godliness descends through the creation process of the chain reaction of cause and effect, going from one level down to the next level, lower than it. And this happens through switches and exchanges and numerical equivalences. I'll explain this in a second. Until finally it goes around and around and around until it comes out here. Okay, there are various codes by which we find points of equanimity in things. Like, for example, one of the more famous ones is Atbash. Atbash means you switch an aleph for a tav and a beis for a shin and a gimel for a resh and a dalet for a kuf, etc., until you get to mem and nun, switching for each other. Okay, so that you get, for example, it says that there's an equivalency. You have the word mitzvah. If you take a mem and a tzaddik and you do it in atbash, what do you get? You get yud and hey. Okay, so that mitzvah is mem tzaddik vav hey, becomes suddenly yud and hey and vav and hey. So is a mitzvah Hashem? No, there's points of equality between the two that we can discuss it. Okay, and there are many such things, and there's points of equality all the time, but it involves, the more you process it, less the godliness is revealed in it. There's another system.
So it's always there, but it's less revealed.
There's another system called Atbach. What's Atbach? Bach is base tes. Okay, there's something called Misperkutten. Misperkutten means chop the zero off. So there's a direct relationship between a chaf and a base. Because you take the zero off of the 20, you get the 2 like in the base. Okay, you have, there's a direct connection between a tuf, a mem, and a dalad. You take off all the zeros and you get 4. Okay? So this system, what do you do? First you chop off the zeros. So you're left with the letters aleph through tes. And then you switch. An aleph switches for a tes. And a beis switches for a ches. A gimel for a zion, etc. Mm-hmm. So that you'll have some word. You'll do it to this, and you'll see that it'll have the same type of thing, but it comes out, but this is more process, because this involved 2 processes. So it's even more concealed.
Yeah.
And then you have gematrias. When I heard about this one, this word Atbach thing, I remembered it very clearly. I was in class with Fitzy Lipsker all over Shalom. And he said that this word equals this word. I don't remember if it was the 2 words. It was a mimer, I think, in Tashin Vav. This word, or Tashin Dalet, this word equals this word in Atbach. I said, what's Atbach? And he says, you do the Misperkutten, you chop off the zeros, you switch the test for the Dal. And I raised my hand and said, wait a minute. That's really a stretch. You got to do all these things. And he said, what happens then you can do? And it didn't work out. It was off by 1. So you could put 1 in for the Kelel too. Kelel means the all the letters together make up like a word. You throw 1 into it. It's close enough. You just throw it in.
Everybody else says the 1.
Throw it. That's because he's the Rosh Kelel, right, so he gets to throw the Kelel in.
He gets to do it. Always does it.
Yeah. So you throw 1 in. It's not exact. You just throw another 1 in because we could. Okay, so I said, the way you're presenting these gematrias, you could get anything to equal anything. I bet if you tried hard enough, you could get Mashiach to equal Malach HaMavis, the angel of death. And he said, you probably could, but you're looking at it backwards. It's not to say that because the gematrias are the same, therefore they're equal.
Oh.
It's because they're the same, therefore they have the same numerical equivalence, and you have to find what are the equivalents between the two.
They could be a relationship.
It's only just an indication for it. Okay, let's finish up. And this is the name which we call it in Hebrew. And this is the vehicle by which, through the contractions of the letters of this name, come from the 10 utterances in the Torah, that they're able, from these 10 utterances, you're able to create a something from a nothing, because the Torah and Hashem are all one. I apologize for those people listening at home for my phone ringing. It's my daughter. But we ended chapter 1. To be continued.